measures, we have two speakers. The first is a lady who kind of fits the description of a Renaissance individual. You know, the Renaissance ideal of being an all-round man, except that it's a woman this time. Someone who takes an interest in a wide variety of things and develops a level of competence and skill in many areas. So when we think of Cassandra Daskin, we think of a very capable administrator who's organized and thorough. We think of a person with multiple creative talents. And we think of a person who has always had an ideal of service through the Cavalarian Women's Club. She actually ran a little, like a nursery for the philosophy school for a number of years. And at this moment, she's dedicating her efforts to her public speaking in the organization. And I invite you to join me in welcoming Cassandra Daskin, who's going to talk to us about looking for stability in a changing world. Please welcome Cassandra.
The hardest thing about giving a talk is listening to what people say about you and then having to live up to it. Good morning, everyone, and good morning to our online and telephone listening audience. The more I thought about the talk and the subject, the more I realized it was a bit of a paradox, because one of the synonyms for stability is constancy, and if there's one constant in life, it's that life will always change. You know, we're looking at time change today, and we can see the end of autumn with the leaves dropping off the trees quickly and the shorter days, less daylight. And the seasons are changing. You know, the Earth turns on its axis, gives us day and night. It rotates around the sun. It gives us the changing seasons. So we're never going to be able to keep a status quo and not have change. I think for people living in Vancouver, it's probably a pretty common experience, or everyone's had it at least. You set out in the sunshine and come home in the rain without an umbrella. So how do you deal with change? If you look at the animal kingdom or the natural world, it's dealt with instinctively. You know, at this time of year, we see the flocks of birds heading south where their winter feeding grounds are. Or if you go around Stanley Park, you'll see flocks of birds that winter in the Vancouver and Fraser Estuary area. Squirrels start growing a thicker coat of hair as the weather gets colder, and they start stowing food away for the winter. They respond instinctively to change. The seasons aren't all the same either. You know, sometimes we'll have a warm winter or a mild winter, and we'll see robins right throughout the year. Other times we have a colder winter, and all of a sudden we see birds that we only see up on the mountains, and the robins have gone. They're enjoying a California holiday. Man is different, though. We have the ability to think and analyze. We don't migrate with the seasons. We put on warmer clothes. We turn up the heat in our homes. We can control our environment to a great extent. And we can choose how we respond to change. We can adapt to it, we can resist it, or we can consciously create it ourselves. Sometimes it's just a matter of perspective. Think about this summer, the hurricane season. As soon as it hits that June to September period, the weather and news broadcasts are always saying, oh, hurricane this, hurricane that. And in the middle of the summer, we had Hurricane Ike that made landfall in Galveston and then moved in over Houston. And there was severe flooding. Homes were flooded. Boats were just tossed up on the freeways and stacked up like matchsticks. And people see devastation and destruction and are not terribly happy about it. That's one perspective about that natural phenomena. But if you think back over hundreds of years, people welcomed the flooding of the farmlands because the soil and the minerals that were washed down the river renewed the soil and made for better crops, more nourishment in the food. So perspective and attitude play a big part in how we consider change. The biggest challenge, though, is how do we handle or perceive external change? And a lot is happening in our world today. In Canada, we've had 3 federal elections in 5 years. We no sooner got rid of all the federal election signs than all the municipal election signs started popping up. It's like the crocuses have died, the daffodils are coming up. Only it's not quite as inspiring as spring flowers. Since January 1980, we've had 3 recessions. And right now it appears that we may be going into a 4th. In a very short period of time, that's 28 years. That's not a very long period of time when you consider our written history. Technology is changing so rapidly that they say within a few years, students that enter a 4-year technology program, by the time they finish the 2nd year, everything they've learned will be out of date. How do you deal with that? So I was looking at, again, different perspective, and I came across a quotation by Diane Ackerman in her book, Cultivating Delight. And she says, consider compost. To create it, one transforms the waste products of the garden by digesting them via bacteria and turning it into rich, dark stuff, essential for further growth. Well, here's a perspective to consider. We have a lot of change going on. We know there's a lot of political chicanery and economic manipulation and conflict. How about if we just consider that as the rich, dark compost that will help us grow? We can make progress in whatever environment or climate there is. We can make personal progress. We can make progress as a group. It comes down to attitude and perspective. Albert Einstein said, the significant problems we face cannot be solved at the same level of thinking we were at when we created them. In other words, if you keep thinking the way you're thinking, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. And that's kind of a sad commentary on our society as a whole today. When you think about back at World War I, it was supposed to be the war that ended all wars. 20 million people died to create a war that would end all wars. If you keep thinking what you're thinking, you'll keep getting what you're getting. And there hasn't been a time in the last 100 years that there hasn't been a war going on somewhere. So what do we want to create in life? We can accept what's handed out to us, or we can make a conscious effort to create what we want in life for ourselves and for humanity as a whole. It's a big ideal, but big ideals have been accomplished before now. What's the opposite of war? I would say it's harmony. And how do we go about creating harmony? Well, I'd like to take us back to our very first understanding or learning or knowledge about the philosophy. Usually when we hear about it, we hear about name. And we'll get a name report, and if we're interested, we might get a balanced name recommendation. And then we might change our names. And at that point, we are creating a harmony within our own thinking. There's a lot of rivers and streams up in the interior of BC where there's been a lot of heavy logging over the years. And some of those streams have been choked with the debris of logging, broken trees, stumps, probably even equipment, if we knew about it. And the streams don't flow properly. The salmon can no longer go up them to their spawning grounds. If the time and trouble is taken to clean out those streams, then the river or stream flows naturally. It can serve as purpose, and salmon can get up to their spawning grounds, and it creates a natural harmony in nature. The stream, the salmon, the environment around it is all serving a purpose in nature, and it's in harmony with itself and with all its other components. Taking on a balanced name is very similar to that. When we take on a balanced name, we're getting rid of all that detritus that's blocking the channel of expression, that's not allowing us to be the person that we can be to realize our full potential and express the highest and best in ourselves. So what else about life analysis training, and how can you use that understanding? Well, when you study the mathematics, you learn what is a person's potential according to their date of birth. What are their minor lessons? What does it mean in their life? What is their group? How do they handle dealing with people? What is their natural response in being with a group of people or dealing with people? You learn to work out a name and know what are the qualities of those names. So when you're dealing with somebody who is strong in the one quality, you know they need space. Give them a little elbow room. Create a harmony in the relationship with that person. Give the two the reassurance they need to have confidence. Give the three the opportunity for self-expression and to shine. Create the environment of system and order and constancy in which a four can thrive. Give a five a challenge. Give a six responsibility. Give the seven an opportunity to reflect, to have the time to think things through and appreciate the deeper aspects of life. Give the eight the opportunity to use their broad perspective of life to see how things should be organized in the best interests of everyone. Give the nine an opportunity to give and inspire others to give. If you use those qualities on a day-to-day basis, think what a potential you have for creating harmony within your home. You know, if you have children or if you know people with children and they have a little youngster that's, you know, they want to be independent, encourage them to allow an independence within a safe structure. Encourage them to know how the children as individuals and allow their potential to express. Take that understanding into your workplace. Now, how many people have ever worked in an office where it was perfect understanding and everybody got along? Well, I can think of maybe one place. And it can be a challenge working with people. They can have prickles and reactions. But if you know the mathematical principle, if you work with that principle, you can create harmony in your workplace. You can encourage other people to make allowances for the individual characteristics of people. So my suggestion here is everybody get out their life analysis books, read the books, memorize the qualities, think about them. Think about, you know, when the one and the two are together in a name, how do they complement each other? How do they create a contradiction or tension? How can you use that understanding to help people relax and be more natural? Use it to create harmony in your environment. If you think, you know, if you want to change, think about the quotation. If you think the way you're thinking, you get the way what you're getting. And if you want to create more harmony, think about using that power of understanding to create harmony. First of all, in your own life, in the environment in which you live, the people that you socialize, work with, live with, and then broader, encourage that understanding to reach out to all people. We don't really have to live in a world where there's conflict. It's been created over thousands of years of thinking in a certain way. If we can change our thinking, encourage a broader change of thinking, we can change the direction that the world is going in and the way humanity is going. But it has to start with the individual. How else? What are some of the other tools? Well, the other big tool that I think of is the cycles for creating constructive change and progress in your own life. Again, if you take that mathematical principle and apply it to time and study what your cycle is, study the pattern of cycles. Every 9 days you go through a 9-day cycle, you have the opportunity to learn, understand, and express those 9 qualities every 9 months, every 9 years. Use it to plan your life. Plan the constructive changes you want to make. If you're in a position where you're going to hire somebody, are you going to hire them if you know that they're in a 4-cycle year? I mean, that would be setting them up for failure. It's not really a constructive move. Or if they're determined to make a change, Help them understand that it's going to be a short-term change and they need to think about their five-cycle year and making a further change. What they seed is going to be what they're going to reap in the future. You can help people further their own progress and make constructive change in their lives by expressing and living that example of following your cycles and encouraging them to do the same thing. It's really important to think about your cycles. It's such a powerful tool. You know, in this day and age, people are saying, well, it's probably not a good time to buy a house. You know, the mortgage rates, well, mortgage rates are pretty low right now. But with uncertain times, I might lose my job. I might lose my house. Well, if you're going to think that way, it's a good chance you're going to get that circumstance. But if you choose the right cycle to make a move, no matter what the circumstances are, you will attract the best available opportunity. So have confidence that the principle works and follow those cycles. Real estate. When we bought our house, we were told it wasn't a good time to buy. The houses in the price range that we wanted, there were bidding wars on them, that people were buying them sight unseen to get a good buy. So we chose our right cycle. We chose half a dozen addresses that we were interested in, gave the information to our real estate agent. She made the phone calls to the owners and came back to us on a good cycle day that one of the houses we were interested in was going to sell. She had a personal connection with that real estate agent. They'd hold it for us for 24 hours before they listed it publicly. We bought our house at $5,000 below asking. We worked with our cycles. We got the best available opportunity at that time. So confidence plays a big part in making this work. It's very easy to fall into the pattern of fear created by the confusion and the distortions. You know, every day you open the newspaper or turn on the radio or look at the internet and it's stock market up 500, down 700, up 200, down, you know. It's up and down and up and down. It's a little yo-yo. And as soon as you start thinking that you're going, optimistic, got to buy, you know, down, up, down, break away from that quality of thinking. Have confidence in your own mind. Mr. Parker in The Ethics of Right Thinking tells us, remember that your mind is the greatest instrument in the universe. So don't get lost in the fear and the confusion put out by the media. Trust your own mind. Trust the integrity of your own thinking. Use the tools that you have, the understanding of the mathematical principle, to understand people and help them realize their potential. Use the tool of cycles to take advantage of the best opportunities in life, to map out your life, and know that if you sow constructively at the right time, you will reap wonderful opportunities in life. Keep clearly in your mind that wherever you can go right, whatever can go right, will go right. Make that your daily mantra. Don't worry about what's happening on the stock market. Don't worry about what's happening in Iran. Don't worry about, you know, what's happening with the housing market or the real estate market or the banks. Have confidence that whatever will go right, whatever can go right, will go right because you are following a principle that works. And that brings me pretty much to the end of my talk. But I really would encourage you to get out your books and read them again. I pretty much guarantee that when you do, you'll find some new nugget that you missed before or some new depth of understanding. Same thing with your cycle charts. And then take that understanding and knowledge with you every day wherever you go. Share it through helping other people understand their purpose in life, the right times to make a move, the right to take advantage of the right opportunities that are out there for them. The more you express that, think again about the saying, whatever you're thinking now is what you're going to get in the future, the more generous you are with that understanding, the more generous life will be to you, and it all becomes very worthwhile for everyone. So thank you for your time, and Stephanie, back to you.
Thank you very much, Cassandra. And during our break, if anybody wants to help themselves to some more Costa Rican coffee, they're very welcome. I wouldn't want it to go to waste. Our second speaker has been a member of this philosophy since childhood and was privileged to be part of the Young Philosophers class. His work is highly detailed and technical, but also gives scope to his creativity and originality. And he also loves the great outdoors. He's not afraid of a challenge, physical or mental. He's also deeply committed to the philosophy and finds outlets for his ideal of service through the men's club and from all kinds of opportunities like mending the fiberglass on the boats at the resort to helping with the cleanup after an event here. So I invite you to welcome Hugh Daskin to talk about giving relative to life's purpose. Hugh.
Good morning, everyone. We all know that giving is important. When we were raised, I think all of us were taught that it's important to think of others and not just be thinking of ourselves. But sometimes we get busy and we get wrapped up in what we're doing and we forget to be giving or to be thinking of others. I'd like to present some practical tips about giving and how it relates to life's purpose. Life is dual. There's the physical side of life and there's the abstract or the power behind life that some people refer to as God. We refer to it as God the principle. But it's the abstract power, the energy behind life. We use our minds to understand the physical side and to understand our emotions, but we need to develop our minds to seek a higher understanding of life and to understand our role in life. We live in the comforts of life and the physical world, but we need to develop our mental concept. But when we study the Kabbalistic philosophy, we learn that every person is unique based on their date of birth and their name. The Kabbalistic philosophy teaches how mathematics can be used to analyze and to understand a person's name and how language relates to understanding your individual qualities. Each person is very different than each other person, but the one thing that is a common thread through all of humanity is the need to be giving. No matter what quality you have, whether you're a one birth path or a nine birth path or any other qualities of name and birth path, everyone needs to be thinking of others, because we live our lives dealing with other people. That's what our life is about. We've been given a beautiful world to live in, and the only reason that there's discord in the world is due to man's thinking. And through people thinking about themselves and being selfish rather than giving. If everyone spent more time and more energy in their life being giving, the world wouldn't be in the state that it is. The reason that we have financial problems and so on is that people are trying to make money and corporations are trying to make money by selfish means rather than by improving the lot of humanity. Humankind is supposedly the top of the evolutionary ladder. Animals show certain characteristics, and some animals you may think show personality because you can recognize one bear as being different than another. They behave differently and they play differently, but they're not anything like humankind, because we as humans have mind, and and the ability to decide whether we want to be constructive or destructive, and to choose how we're going to live our lives, whereas animals live by an instinctive law. They're not like us, and they don't have that choice. So it's up to us to use our minds to create a better world for ourselves, to create a better world for everyone. With the power of mind, we have to learn to use it wisely. So giving takes many forms, and some are more obvious than others. Some of the more obvious aspects are when we give or we help someone, we often receive a thank you from them, not always. Giving tends to make us feel good. Some people will tend to reciprocate when we do a kind deed for them. They'll reciprocate, and it sets an example. They'll try to follow our example and do the same thing for us and for others. Sometimes we see immediate results, and that's the things I just mentioned are the sort of immediate results that we sometimes see when we give, and that helps. But also we have to learn to give when we don't see those immediate results. The law of life is that if you give, you'll receive. That's a law, something like gravity, or like when you plant a seed and if you water it and give it sunshine, it will grow. It's also true that when we give, we will receive one way or the other. We don't always see the obvious results immediately, but in the long term, we do find that we do see results. And if everyone was thinking more about giving, then life would be, the world would be a far better place to live in. When we set an example of giving, people will come to respect us, and they'll try to follow that example and to try to be better themselves. We can't really succeed in life without other people. Our life involves other people, and we really need other people to accomplish things in life. It's the synergy of working with other people. And we need to learn to give just for the love of giving, because, like I say, we don't always see the immediate results right there in front of us, but if we learn to give as just a way of living, that's what we have to strive for. And knowing in our minds that doing so, we're making life better for everyone. So the law of giving applies to all human endeavors. And I'd like to use a little example from business that shows how this can work. I've had the opportunity to mentor a college student who's in his last year of college, and he'll be graduating next year. He would like to become an entrepreneur. And when I had the opportunity to mentor this fellow, I got wondering, what can I tell him that will help him in his path in life, what he wants to accomplish? And the one thing that I realized, one very important thing that I realized I could tell him was approach everyone with the attitude of, how can I help you? When you're in business, basically you need to think of your customers, because the only way that you're going to have a successful business is by having customers that are satisfied with what they're receiving from you. And so when you approach customers or potential other businesses that you might do work for, And it doesn't matter what kind of business it is. It applies to all different kinds of businesses. If you can approach them thinking about how can I help you rather than how can I make some money off of you or thoughts like that, but try to understand what their needs are, then you can offer them what they really need and they will become a satisfied customer. So the more that you can think about your customer, the better your business will be. So giving is a very important part of business. And if you don't do that, if you just think about how can I make more money and you don't think about your customers' needs, you won't have customers. If your customers are successful, you'll be successful. And so always think what's the best for them. You either have happy customers or you don't have customers. And when you're meeting potential business contacts, again, think in terms of how can I help you, not does this customer or company, well, they have work for me, but think when you meet someone who's in business, think how can I help you? Maybe you might have the contact that they need to further their business. That works two ways, and they might have the contact that you need to further your business as well. But if you think about how can I help you, for one thing, when you're meeting potential business clients, then you're not feeling like you're pushing your business on them or trying to sell them, but you're meeting them just as a person and thinking, how can I possibly help this person? When you do that, it takes the pressure off. If they have no way of helping you or you can't help them, that's fine too. The point is that you're thinking about their needs and possibly how you might be able to fill their needs. The same thing for people that are not in business, but that work at a job. Instead of thinking, how much will I earn, or when's my next raise going to be, or how soon is quitting time, if you can think of that this is a team, and how can I work better as a team and help the other team members, and how can I help this company get ahead, then if you do that, it's a win-win. It's good for both yourself and for the company, and you'll enjoy your work a lot better too. So it's important in business, in work, in the workplace, to be giving and to be thinking of the needs of your customer or the company that you work for. Become known for being supportive of the other employees. Become known for your integrity, and they will respect you for it, and they'll appreciate that you're such a good person to work with, and they'll try to follow that example. So by doing so, you're helping all the people that you know to become better people and in the workplace to be better people to work with. So in personal life, your friends and acquaintances and the people that you deal with in life, they're like your customers in business, that if we can go through life thinking about what can I do for you, then we'll be a lot more successful in life. And if everyone was to be thinking that way, then when you meet someone else, they'll be thinking about what they can do for you as well, and everyone would be more supportive. People forget that if they try to get ahead by cutting down other people, it doesn't help them or it doesn't help the other person, it's much better to work using synergy and work as a team. There's a real energy in giving. It's a creative power. When you give to someone, it lightens their day. It can put a smile on their face. And if they're having difficulties, it can make the difference. Maybe if they're feeling down in the dumps, it can help them lift them out of that so that they can, in turn, be more giving and pass that on to other people. Sometimes giving can be quite time-consuming, sometimes not. If you do it for the joy of giving, then you don't mind if it's something time-consuming. Maybe you're helping someone who is sick and spending a lot of time with them, but it's important. And if you do it for the love of it, then it doesn't seem like a big burden. Sometimes it's just a small thing, just a smile. A smile can really, it's really infectious. And when you smile at someone, they quite often smile back and it gives them a lift. Just holding the door for someone, letting someone get ahead of you in traffic rather than getting uptight about the fact that they're trying to cut in or whatever. If you try to keep them from cutting in front of you, it just gets them upset. And it doesn't really make much difference in how fast you're going to get where you're going. But if you just let them get ahead, if they're that anxious, it makes you feel better, and also it avoids causing stress in the other driver that they're probably going to pass on to yet other drivers. In the Cavalierian philosophy, we have something called the Cavalierian Ethics of Right Thinking. And I was reading through the Cavalierian Ethics, and if we could live up to what the Cavalierian Ethics of Right Thinking says, we would be very good people. But it's something to strive for. So I just thought I'd mention just a couple of points that are presented in the Cavalierian Ethics of Right Thinking that we can think about as far as how we can give. Never use the power of word, speech, to destroy the reputation of others. So if you can't say something good about someone, then don't say anything. Because to destroy someone else, you're just causing harm to yourself as well. It's like you're wallowing in negativity yourself and dragging yourself down as well as them. And so instead of something constructive, you're destroying something. Endeavor to develop an open mind, giving credit to others for their mental effort. So if you must criticize, then do it in a constructive way rather than just as a criticism. You can do it by asking questions, like, had you thought about this other way of doing something, but try to draw them out using questions rather than telling the person you did it wrong and getting them, making them feel bad. By using questions, you can draw them out and help them possibly figure out in their own minds other ways that something could be done, or maybe how they could have improved on what they're doing. So it's what they call constructive criticism. It's not so much criticism as just constructive helping a person and assisting them to come to a realization themselves. Do not say wrong or hurtful things for fun or to build up your own importance. Sometimes it's a very fine line between teasing and hurtfulness. So we have to be careful what we say. Sometimes a little bit of fun is fine, and a little bit of teasing, if it's done kindly, can be all right. But we do have to be careful about saying hurtful things. Kill out ego and false pride. Ego is essentially the opposite to giving. It's an expression of self-centeredness, and what we need to strive for is to get out of ourself and be thinking about others. Do not meet others upon the plane of anger. So again, anger is a reflection of self. It's also pretty much the opposite of giving. We feel angry because we feel hurt about something, or we feel injustice at a certain situation. But really, the important thing isn't whether something has supposedly hurt us or isn't just. The important thing is to figure out what the problem is and deal with it. So really, there's really no place, no constructive place for anger. It's essentially just an expression of selfishness, really. So if someone has said something that tends to make us angry, if we can respond without anger and either talk about it later when we have our thoughts under control, or talk about it now but without anger, and deal with it calmly, because anger doesn't solve anything. It just tends to make the other person also feel angry. And so we really should strive to control our anger, and when something happens, rather than feeling angry, just deal with it objectively and recognize that it's just something that needs to be dealt with, not take it personally, and deal with it on a constructive basis in a calm manner. Doing things for ourselves and for relaxation is important, whether it's going to a movie or spending time with friends, going for a walk, enjoying a dessert. But we can enjoy our treats and our things for ourselves a lot more if we feel that we have earned it by being a constructive person and by thinking of others when the opportunity arises. So we can't spend our whole lives thinking of no one but ourselves. When we're brushing our teeth, we're not thinking of someone else. It's just something, a chore that needs to be done. But we can spend more time out of our lives thinking of others. And when we're dealing with others, we should be trying to think about, what are this person's needs? How could I help them? The founder of the Cowboyan philosophy, Alfred J. Parker, signed his books, Yours in Service. So we could do well to try to follow his example. So with that, let's all give more thought on a daily basis to being more giving. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hugh. We need to let you know about things that are coming up. Here we are.